Welcome to Now You Know. I'm Catherine Sussman. Today I'm speaking with Rob Laidlaw, animal advocate, author, and founder of the Canadian-based wildlife protection charity, ZooCheck. Rob, it's so nice to talk to you today, this time on the topic of bats.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I think this is a very important topic, and it's one that I've actually been talking to a lot of people about. And quite to my surprise, there's tremendous interest both with kids and with adults in bats.
Okay, so I have to admit, I don't really share your fascination and love of bats. I get how children are really into bats in terms of like the spooky kind of side of bats. But this interview today is all about you persuading me, I think, to engage in your love of this particular animal.
Okay.
Basically, help me understand your love of bats. Why are bats so cool?
Well, they're cool for a whole variety of reasons. And maybe I should just step back and explain how I became interested in bats. You know, when I was a little kid, I remember going up to cottage country north of Toronto. And at night, you would go out on the roads and they would have widely dispersed streetlights. And in the beam cast by the streetlights, you would often see bats flying in and out. You couldn't really tell anything about them. They were sort of just little and brown. And you knew there were bats because there were no birds out at night. And they were way too big to be moths. But that's all you would see, these little animals flitting in and out of the illumination cast by these streetlights. And I didn't know anything about bats. But then later on, as I became an adult, I started doing cave exploring. And I would go into caves, some of them very small, some of them very large. And, you know, occasionally you would see one bat here and there. At other times you would see groups of bats. So it could be anywhere from a 20 to 100 bats. And in some caves, there's actually thousands or even millions of bats. So I was exposed to at least seeing bats visually for quite a while I was doing this cave exploration. But I never really knew much about them. And when an opportunity came to write a children's book about bats, I decided this was a great opportunity, not only to write another book for kids about wildlife, but also to learn about bats because I didn't know much about them. And in researching that book, it just blew my mind, just the diversity of bats, the roles they play in the ecologies in which they live around the world, the adaptations they have, the things they do, the intelligences that they possess, the lifespans that, you know, that are longer than anyone would expect. So there was just so much about bats that was just so amazing. And I've spoken recently over the past few weeks to many groups of adults and kids about bats. And almost without exception, people are coming up to me afterwards and saying, "Oh my God, I never knew that. That completely changes the way I think about bats." So I think there's a lot that we can get into about why bats are so interesting, so amazing, so special, and should be loved and protected by everybody.
So the first thing, like first things first, bats are mammals, correct? Not everybody knows that, I don't think.
Yes, bats are mammals, and they're the only mammals that are capable of true flight. We have animals or mammals that can glide, like flying lemurs and flying squirrels. But yeah, bats are mammals. They have hair. They have, you know, many similarities in terms of their functions to humans. And the babies are born live. They're called pups, and they drink their mother's milk. So yeah, for anybody who doesn't know or didn't realize, bats are mammals.
And are they social creatures?
Yeah, and there's a diversity amongst bats. According to Bat Conservation International, there's about 1,330 species of bats in the
wow.
world. And just to put that into perspective, that is one-fifth of all the mammal species in the world are bats. Most people couldn't name a single species of bat, or if they do, it would be the vampire bat because they've seen Dracula movies. There's not a single person that I've encountered that realized how diverse bats are as a group. So there's 1,330 species, all different kinds of bats, and all of them are social to some degree, some way more so than others, but they all have social lives.
Wow. And how many species, you might not know this one off the top of your head, but how many species do we have in North America of bat?
Well, there's 48 species of bats that are found in the United States. There's 18 species of bats that are found in Canada. And there's 8 species of bats found here in our home province of Ontario. So what you find when you look at the distribution and numbers of bats is that the number of species and the number of individuals diminishes as you move into colder regions of the world. So whereas we in Canada have 18 species, if you went to Indonesia or India or an African country or Brazil, you'd find much greater numbers of bats and different kinds of bats. So, you know, down there, you might find that there's 175 or 180 species of bats. So fewer in the colder regions of the world. And as you move to the equator, the numbers of bats, both as species and as individuals, increases dramatically.
And what percentage of bats live in caves? Why is it that some bats are flying around under the lamplight and other bats are in caves? Is that species specific?
Well, there are some bats that, you know, for the most part, live in caves. They don't feed in caves because their food sources, which are generally flying insects, are outside of the cave. So they'll reside in caves during the day. It's a safe place with a stable environment and not very many predators, if any. So it's a great place for bats to go and hang out and sleep. But they do come out of the cave at night and they forage in fields and, you know, on the sides of mountains and in forests and all those other places. But a great many bats don't reside in caves. They live in forests. They live in deserts. There are bats that inhabit all different kinds of habitats. And they're found everywhere in the world, pretty much, except Antarctica and the Arctic. So, you know, there's a diversity of habitats for them to live in. But they're everywhere, really, when you look at bats in their distribution. But certainly some of them live in caves. And many bats will go to caves to hibernate. But then when they're not in their hibernation, they won't live in caves. And there's other bats, like Mexican free-tail bats in Texas, that come up and they give birth in caves because, again, they're stable environments for the bats. They're safe and it's a good place to raise their pups. So, you know, you get a lot of bats that frequent caves, but a lot of bats don't live in caves. And, you know, certainly many of the bats that people might encounter if they're in a place like Asia or Australia probably don't live in caves. They're fruit bats and other kinds of bats. So there's a diversity in where they live. But it's really funny because every audience, when I ask them, where do bats live? Inevitably, the first person to answer always says caves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a misconception. Sure, some bats live in caves, but they live in all kinds of other places as well.
And how long do they hibernate for? That's interesting.
Well, it depends on where they are. But if you're looking in a place like Ontario, generally, you know, it would be late September and they would be emerging in possibly early April. But there's some variation and there's variation, you know, as you move to other regions. But it's a fairly substantive period of hibernation.
Wow. And so do they get much exercise at all during that period?
No, my understanding is that most bats wake up a few times during their hibernation cycle because they go to the bathroom, they may adjust where they are and do some other things, but then they go back to sleep. And other than that, no, my understanding is there's not a lot of activity. I've been in caves. I don't do it anymore, but prior to knowing that it was not good to go into caves where bats were hibernating, I would occasionally encounter bats and occasionally you would see one flying around. My hope is that that would be just temporary and the bat would go back to sleep because you don't want the bats to use up their fat reserves and starve before the spring comes.
Oh, okay. And you mentioned age. So how long do bats live?
Well, it's really interesting with bats because, you know, in biology, there's this sort of rule of thumb that if you have small animals with high metabolisms, they live very short lives. So a good example would be a mouse. So, you know, a mouse is a very small animal, fits in the palm of your hand, and it has a very high metabolism. And at 2 years of age, it's old. And, you know, if you find a three-year-old mouse, that's a pretty elderly mouse. Well, for bats, they seem to buck that trend. At least many bats do. And in fact, there's one bat, a very small micro bat. So, you know, smaller than your hand. And it's called, I think it's the Brandt's myotis, and that there's one individual that is known to be 44 years old. But certainly there are many of these small bats that live upwards of 30 years. And for the flying foxes, the fruit bats, they're well documented to live 25 to 30 years. And for the other bats, you know, their lifespans or potential lifespans may be lower, but they're still a lot longer than comparable species, at least comparable in size and in metabolism. So they buck the trend. And in fact, there's a lot of interest in studying the bat genome as a way of possibly informing how to look at human longevity as well. Because, bats live a lot longer than anyone thought they would, and people want to know why. The only other animal that bucks that trend, other than bats, is the naked mole rat. So they're very, very interesting in terms of their lifespans. It's quite remarkable.
So totally digressing in this all. So I think you're going to want to probably dispel the myth that that bats are blind.
Yeah, all bats can see. The two great myths about bats that if you're talking about bats, inevitably somebody will bring one or both of them up is that bats are blind and that they get in your hair. Well, neither are true. I think the fact that bats come out at night predominantly, there's some bats that are, out at other times of the day. But I think the fact that they come out at night, people just assumed that they wouldn't have functioning eyes, or at least, well-functioning eyes. But in fact, with this huge diversity of bats, I think it's well known that bats can all see. And some bats, like the megabats, the flying foxes, have good sight. And in fact, bats may navigate when they're migrating, because some bats do migrate, some relatively short distances, other longer distances. But it's thought that many of those bats migrate by sight. So, the myth that bats are blind is exactly that. It's a myth. And then the other myth about bats getting in your hair is completely false. I've been in dozens and dozens and dozens of caves where bats are all over the place and flying by.
They didn't have any interest in your hair.
No interest in my hair. And I have never heard of a single caver ever even being struck or, having any contact whatsoever with a bat. So
it's really interesting because bats, certain species, certain animals have such a bad rap. Just like it's reminding me of sharks and because of the movie Jaws. And it seems like bats are just in that category. Spiders are in that category. And it really is, a shame that certain animals are kind of vilified.
Yeah. And bats are definitely in that category because a lot of people, they don't like snakes. They don't like cockroaches. They don't like rats.
Mice, I guess.
Yeah, there's a whole sort of category of animals, and bats are, for many people, in that category. And it's largely because, to those people, they're mysterious. They don't know anything about them, and so they're tremendously misunderstood. And in fact, bats are harmless, and they're exceedingly beneficial to the environment and to us.
So can you give us a little list of, you mentioned that, and I myself cannot name any species of bat other than the vampire bat. Terrible. And I love animals and I watch all kinds of documentaries. So can you just give us a tiny bit of an education so people listening to this can at least name a few different species of bat?
Yeah, well, for anybody who's out there in the field with a bat detector where they only hear the sounds, they can sometimes identify the bat species according to the sounds that are picked up by the bat detector. If you're just looking at them visually, if you're not an expert, then you probably can't identify them. In fact, a lot of people, including people who study them, call them little brown jobs because that's what they look like, little brown jobs flying around in the air. So they can be very difficult to identify for lay people. But there are all different species of bats. Here in Ontario, we have tricolored bats. We have little brown bats, big brown bats. We have northern long-eared myotis. We have red bats. We have silver-haired bats. In other parts of the world, you've got all different kinds of free-tailed bats. You've got a whole set of carnivorous bats, of fruit-eating bats, of pollen and nectar-eating bats. There's really a tremendous, tremendous diversity, and it would be hard to sort of give pointers on how to identify them. Some may be obvious, like the Honduran white bat. It's a little white bat. And if you're in Honduras, maybe that's what you're seeing. If you see a white bat. If you're down looking at a cave like Bracken Cave in Texas, that cave is filled with Mexican free-tailed bats. So when they come out, those are Mexican free-tails. But other than those types of situations or being there with an expert that tells you, hey, that's what we're looking at or that's what we're hearing, it's pretty hard.
And could you just speak a bit about their intelligence?
Yeah, this is something that surprised me when I was researching my book. And you know, I had never really thought too much about bat intelligence. Obviously, they needed to have some smarts. And I remember one time I was asking Brock Fenton, who is one of the world's leading bat experts, and he very kindly provided some photos for my bat book. But I asked him, I said, when I'm in caves, I might be like 2 kilometers from the nearest entrance, and I've made like 500 twists and turns and climbs to get to where I am, and yet I see bats there, and I know there's only one entrance. I said, how do they navigate? And he goes, they navigate by memory, just like you do. And that sort of was this epiphany for me, realizing, hey, that bats are pretty smart. And there's all kinds of science coming out about how smart bats are. And I attended a talk by Dan Riskin, who is a host on one of the television shows, a science show. And in his talk, he was talking about how intelligent bats were and how vampire bats were one of the most intelligent. And I think they have to be. They're very long-lived animals. They have complex lives. They're very social. They have behaviors that are quite surprising. They have to navigate both, you know, in small quarters like in caves, and they have to navigate if they're migratory. You know, they need to be pretty smart. So I think there's all kinds of signs when you look at bats that they are pretty darn smart animals.
So can you get into with me a bit what threats they're currently facing?
Yeah, there's all kinds of threats, and they vary from place to place. So, you know, in some areas of the world, millions of bats are killed as pests. In other areas, bats are eaten by people. We have here in North America different kinds of threats. Probably the biggest threat to certainly hibernating bats at the moment is white nose syndrome. And that's a fungal disease that's thought to have come from Europe on the clothes of somebody who was probably in a cave in Europe and then brought the disease back on their clothing and deposited it probably in House Cavern in New York. And that disease has since spread halfway across the continent and killed anywhere from 8 to 12 million bats.
Awesome.
So, you know, that's one of the biggest threats. And people thought that it would only affect hibernating bats, but it has been seen on several other non-hibernating species. And nobody knows what, if any, effect it will have, because it normally is problematic for bats that hibernate. And the reason for that is that white nose makes them use up more energy during their hibernation cycle. And the irritation caused by the fungus on their face, on their skin, and on their wings will wake the bat up more than the bat should be up. And the bat will then utilize more of its fat reserves. And if all of them go by, you know, this increased expenditure because of the disease generally, plus being woken up, then all of the fat reserves may be gone. The bat wakes up, it flies outside and either dies of the cold or starves to death because there's no flying insects to eat. So that's probably the biggest threat right now. But there's also habitat destruction, fragmentation, and modification. There's wind turbines that right now are killing millions of bats. There's people that are disturbing bats, and they're highly sensitive to disturbance. And also people just because they misunderstand bats, less so here in Canada and the United States, but people hurt bats because they either don't like them or they fear them. So
yeah, I was going to say, just sort of in, again, getting back to that parallel with sharks or animals that are kind of vilified or have a bad rap, maybe because bats are nocturnal, or maybe just because bats have been, you know, vilified in that way with Halloween and, you know, all of these different factors. We don't really think about why they're beneficial ecologically and why they should be protected, never mind just ethically because they are a living being, but also like ecologically. Could you maybe get into that a little bit?
Yeah, they have incredibly important roles in the environment. And with over 1,330 species, you know, for anybody who studies biology, they should realize, wow, that's pretty significant in the grand scheme of certainly the mammal species that we have here on Earth. But they serve incredibly important functions. If you look at fruit bats in the tropics, they're amongst the most important seed dispersers in all of the tropics, because at night they'll go out for 4, 6, 8 hours. They'll be consuming fruit. The fruit moves very rapidly through their system, so they may be flying and pooping out the digested fruit as early as 20 minutes later, and the seeds haven't had time to digest, so the seeds are dispersed as these bats fly. And at night, the bats will fly over areas where birds won't during the daytime, so they're incredibly important for seed dispersal in tropical regions. Throughout the world, bats are incredibly important pollinators of plants. In fact, there are many species of plants that have co-evolved with bats, and they actually have flowers, you know, big, bright, smelly flowers that only open up at night so that bats can pollinate them. And those would be the pollen-eating and nectar-eating bats. So they've co-evolved, and if bats weren't there, they may not even be around. Bats are important pollinators for commercially produced crops like bananas and mangoes and durian fruit and all kinds of other, you know, commercially used and consumed plants that people value. Bats are important as one of the primary, if not the primary, consumers of nighttime insects. So in certain areas, certainly not all areas, but in certain areas, you know, that may be a very good benefit to agriculture. There, you know, bats are important in natural systems because they serve other functions. If there are large numbers of bats in caves, their poop builds up into these deep guano beds, like at Bracken Cave, where it's estimated to be about 30 meters deep. You have whole biological systems that are living in these caves that live nowhere else that are dependent on the bats there. Mm-hmm. The bats themselves may be food for all kinds of animals. So you've got snakes, you've got lizards, you've got wild dogs, you've got cats, you've got coatimundis and raccoons, you've got bat hawks and all kinds of other raptorial birds that eat bats. So they're an important food source for other animals as well. So, you know, when you look at bats and how they, or the roles they play in the environment and what contributions they make, it very rapidly becomes clear that they are essential to healthy environments. And I could go on, there's a lot more, but I think you get the point.
I get the point. And what do you suggest, and where do we even start to try to help bats? What is the most immediate, you know, need?
Well, I think that everybody who's wanting to help bats has to sort of do the, and I know it sounds like a cliche to say this, but talk to their policymakers at every level of government and say, this is very important. And what's really surprising when people do that is they'll find that there's a lot of receptiveness to this, because people in fish and wildlife agencies and government agencies that deal with wildlife, they know how valuable bats are, and there's tremendous desire to try to help bats and save bats. So I think if people reinforce what these people in government are actually trying to do, it'll really help their efforts to save bats. But there's also other things you can do. You know, sometimes as basic as if you get a bat in your house, never chase the bat, never hit the bat, never try to catch the bat. You know, what you want to do is close the door to the room the bat is in, open a window and turn off the lights. You know, 9 times out of 10, the bat's just going to fly out. Problem solved and the bat's safe. If you don't have that ability, then just let the bat fly around until it lands on a curtain or a piece of furniture gently. You take a towel, you know, wrap the towel so it's 2 or 3 layers thick, very gently, because they're very fragile. Grasp the bat with the towel, put it in a box, and take it outside. You never want to chase a bat or hit a bat.
I think you're right, though. Like, they basically, bats need to be rebranded because people think of them as scary pests, I think. So yeah. I think in addition to, you know, going to policymakers, it's so great that you wrote this book, Bat Citizens, because it's important that children have an education about what bats truly are. And then if they just talk amongst themselves and, you know, we kind of shed this stigma that bats have for future generations, that would go a long way in and of itself, I think.
Yes, I think once people have that understanding about bats, that they lose their fear. And actually, I heard this morning, I dropped by my publisher's office, and they said that when the layout artist was working on the book, that the layout artist was really, I think she used the word afraid or fearful of bats. But by the end of doing the book, she had lost her fear because she had a better understanding about what they are and, you know, what they do and how important they are. And also, bats are super cute.
I was going to say, can you develop a relationship with a bat? I mean, they're mammals, so I don't see why not? But
yes, yes. And I've heard stories from some of the researchers when, you know, when they're working with bats in laboratory settings and they're not doing invasive research. They're not cutting them up or anything. They're just studying how they fly or, you know, other types of things bats do. But they say that the bats are pretty smart. You know, they know who they are and sometimes they know what they're expected to do. And, you know, there's a lot of stories, many of them anecdotal, about, you know, have some kind of relationship with their human caretakers.
How do bats do in zoos?
It varies, and it varies on the expertise of the zoo. Certainly the fruit bats, if they're given ample space, a proper climate and enrichment and all of the other things that all other animals need, then, you know, they can survive quite handily. You know, it's not like in the wild, but they can at least have a quality of life if everything is provided in the right way. For the insectivorous bats, they're much harder to care for, and a lot of zoos have not had a great deal of success with them, although, you know, some have managed to keep them. Personally, I'm against keeping any insectivorous bats in captivity, and most of the fruit bats as well. I think that, you know, possibly as a retirement or a rescue situation for animals that can't be put back into the wild, you know, captivity might be an option. But generally speaking, I think that, you know, bats should be out in the wild, living their lives, doing what they do and facing the challenges that they're evolved to face. And that's the best place for them.
How much do bats fly compared to birds, for example? How much exercise do they get daily? How much space do they need?
There's a great diversity, and I don't actually have any statistics on that. I know that, you know, many of the small microbats that we have here in Ontario, you know, they'll fly a couple of kilometers a night. They'll be going, you know, up and down throughout the canopy down in the lower levels of the forest. They'll be going across fields. Other bats will fly longer distances. And in fact, you know, many of the bats here in Canada, they may fly to a hibernation site that's several hundred kilometers away in order to hibernate. There are bats that I've seen down in the southern United States that I was told migrate 1,000 or 1,200 kilometers away, so quite substantive distances. So
they're really not a suitable candidate for captivity then. They are wide-ranging.
Yeah, they're certainly wide-ranging, you know, far beyond anything that could be provided in a captive setting. And I understand, of course, that, you know, in any captive setting, no matter how good it might be, you just can't provide the space or the conditions that that animal would experience in the wild. But I think for many of these animals, including small animals like bats, that they are wide-ranging, and that would probably be an indicator that, you know, if they're going to be in captivity, it better be for a very good reason.
Where do you recommend we see bats in the wild for people that are really having a strong interest and would like to do that? You said entering caves is not a good idea with bats.
Yeah. Entering caves or culverts or old buildings where there are bats is dangerous for the bats and can be dangerous for the people that are entering these buildings or chambers or caves. I wouldn't advise that. You know, there are lots of city parks that nature centers. There are conservation centers that do bat walks in the summertime. I led one just a little while ago, where you go out with a bat detector and it's at dusk and you can see the bats moving around and you can pick up their calls using the bat detector.
What's a bat detector?
it's like a TV remote, except it picks up the signals, the ultrasonic signals from bats that are not able to be heard by humans, and it converts them into a signal that you can actually hear and see. And some of them, the more expensive ones, actually identify the bat species. But even the cheap ones, you can pick up the calls and then go home and check on your computer. What did you hear and identify the bat species? So you can do that. You can go. There's all kinds of caves like Bracken Cave in Texas. There's Old Glory Hole in Colorado. There's Carlsbad's Caverns, Sauter Cave in Alabama. There's all kinds of caves where you can go and actually watch bats emerge from the caves at night. There are big bat houses that have been constructed. There's one at the University of Florida that has, they actually have two bat houses that house about 300,000 bats, and people come from far and wide to watch them emerge at night. And actually, there's one of these very large bat houses that's being constructed here in Ontario at a conservation area in St. Catharines, and they were just building it when I was giving a talk down there. And quite fascinating. I believe, if my memory is correct, it was supposed to be able to house about 3,000 bats. So there's opportunities if you want to go and at least get a good glimpse of bats, learn something about them. Primarily, it's through watching emergences from houses or from caves, or by doing bat walks.
Well, you've definitely given me a lot of information. I know a lot more about bats now, but that it really is kind of a blind spot for a lot of us that love animals. So thank you for having, you know, taken the time to take bats very seriously for a change, and you've rebranded them for me, at least personally. So thanks, Rob. Great to talk to you today.
Okay, thank you.